Welcome into Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
Get out your coffee. We've got a ton of news to get to today. This is the show where we try to unpack the stories, the news stories you might not get in the mainstream media, or if you do, there's going to be propaganda and sort of a billionaire spin to it all. So what we try to cover here on the show is free of that propaganda.
We try to give it a humble spin. Ask questions.
A humble brag.
Not a humble brag. because we are humiliated plenty of times on our own show.
That's right.
We try and be humble so that we can ask questions and maybe not look ignorant for trying to pretend we know everything.
Well, we don't know everything, and we do make mistakes. That's what we do. We're human beings. But we've got a lot of news to get to on the show today. We're going to talk about, let's put up the rundown here. This is what's coming up on the show. We're going to talk about Vladimir Putin making a big warning to the West. That we have World War III on our hands. We're going to hear from what the Russians are saying today. We're also going to hear from the White House on new weapons and basically this back and forth over weapons. Like, hey, if you send these long-range weapons to us, that's going to be World War III. And the White House is like basically saying, hey, maybe we won't send you long weapons. We're going to send you medium weapons.
We'll see about that. Yeah. We're also going to talk about what the Wuhan lab is doing about monkeypox. Do you all want them involved? Because they are. Did you know that? We're going to explain.
We're also going to look at Team Biden because, boy, there's some ownership of what has happened with inflation. We're hearing from the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, on inflation. And then other members of the administration are basically saying, hey, it wasn't me. It was their fault. So we're gonna. It was quite a blame game that's been happening. So we'll talk about that. Philip is here, I think. Is Philip in the control booth running the show? I think you are. I think you are.
I could hear the.
Yes,
show.
I am. Yes, I am. I wasn't. I was only talking to you guys. I wasn't talking to the show. So sorry. It's a lot of buttons.
This is real life.
Yeah.
We also have Kevin with us today. I don't know if he wants to talk on the show, but he is our resident expert on the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. Kevin, do you want to ring in on that?
Well, boy, putting him on the spot. I don't know if he has the buttons. So he can't do that.
Okay. I'm gonna just assume that he's authorized me to speak for him. So okay. I now speak for Kevin in the chat. So
all
whatever
right.
I say is officially Kevin's opinion. So
okay,
yeah,
that seems fair.
I do feel like we should spend a few minutes. This was not in the rundown, but the verdict came in just minutes before we came on the air. So I do feel like we should spend a few minutes talking about it because it has sucked the air out of the news cycle lately. People are obsessed with this trial. I think it says a lot about us that we are obsessed with the trial, but we're going to tell you the verdict. We're going to let you ring in a little bit, and then we're going to give it some breathing space because I honestly don't know what Entertainment Tonight is going to do without this trial, right?
So here is, without burying the lead, here it is just moments ago, literally as we were getting ready for the show, the verdict is in. Johnny Depp wins massively this defamation case against Amber Heard. So let's kind of go through some of this. So out of Fairfax, Virginia, Johnny Depp won on all three counts of his defamation lawsuit against Amber Heard on Wednesday. The claim that his ex-wife sullied his reputation and damaged his career when she wrote about becoming a public figure representing domestic abuse following the couple's split. So he gets, what does he get in total? He gets like 10.3 million.
So he won one count of his judgment for $10 million. He won another for $5 million, even though the maximum amount in Virginia for that defamation claim was $350,000. So he won't get the full shebang. But so that he is awarded in damages, the jury awarded him $15 million. He won't get all of that, but that still is something. That's a judgment, right? That he can say, I won this in a court of law. Now, on her claims, she won only one of two. So she won $2 million. So he won pretty much everything he claimed, and she won about a third of what she claimed. So this really is going to be spun as a big win for him, right? Now,
I don't know if you need to spin it. I mean, it is, right? I mean, she comes out and says, the disappointment I feel today is beyond words. I'm heartbroken that the mountain of evidence still was not enough to stand up to the disproportionate power, influence, and sway of my ex-husband. Heard said in a statement. So she's they're basically saying, hey, this is a loss for us, right?
Yes, I suppose you're right. But she won at least one count, saying that what he published was harmful to her or was about her, too. So in her counter arguments, there was a bit of a win for her. But she obviously, she loses the dollar amount. She loses her defense, right? Her defense just fell flat when she said, I didn't really write this as a defamatory article about you. I just felt like every time I watched it, it was a big room full of unconsciousness, like people behaving in unconscious ways, you know, people treating each other badly because they themselves were hurting. It was amazing to me that she took this all the way to trial, because if you have a good lawyer will say all of these things will be fair game in this trial. It will not be a place where you can sort of put your best foot forward. You don't have Hollywood's best to make you scripted, to make you look beautiful, to make you, although she did, of course, look beautiful.
Did she?
Well, yeah, I was very interested in this hair where you like talk up half of your head. I don't know why you do that. Like,
so funny to read comments on our Justin Trudeau video. Like, yet, like people love that you're obsessed with hair.
I'm noticing hair. I mean, I have to do my own hair for the show, so it was clearly.
It's like, how can you work a hair comment in every story we do?
It's just something top of mind. Yeah, I mean,
and top of head.
Yes.
Yeah. So okay. I mean. So anyway, he wins this big defamation case. I mean, the bottom line is that she defamed him.
Yes, and she saw fit to take it all the way to trial. She could have settled this at any given time, right? She didn't have to do it this way. Although maybe he was unamenable to a settlement. We don't know, right? But the fact that they both were choosing to entangle their energy for so long and so publicly, it just feels like a choice that is outside the realm of possibility, I think, for normal humans who don't have that tolerance of embarrassment or finances or all kinds of things. Like, it just was such a strange, energetic choice for all of them. And now it's over, and I don't know what
the press
is going to do. I also do want to say, though, he was vindicated in a court of law saying this article she wrote was defamatory because it wasn't true. And he was able to bring witnesses to prove that he never harmed her, right? Why didn't the press ask? Why did the press run these stories and allow herself to claim that she was a victim of domestic violence without doing any due diligence about what they published,
maybe that's
right?
At the heart
of it. Don't think we need, I think that the media has some accountability. It's interesting that they were not sued.
Well, I mean, this is at the heart of the whole thing, right? It's that, oh my God, we always have to believe the woman no matter what. And this shine, I think the reason that this was so powerful is it shined a light on the fact that actually, yeah, men can be abused just like women.
But he wasn't claiming abuse until he was accused of abuse, right? So the press allowed her to claim that she was a domestic violence victim without any due diligence, right?
Right. And he lost jobs as a result of it. I mean, the unceremoniously, he wasn't able to really kind of wrap up what he was going to do with
the
Disney.
Dumbledore movies.
Disney, yeah.
Yes.
On Pirates and everything. So there's a lot that, you know, anyway, this was a fascinating, maybe it was a respite from what's been going on in the world, I guess. Certainly TikTok loved it.
I don't think a good one, though.
Well, TikTok loved it. I mean, certainly people were making all sorts of memes on TikTok that were out of control and kind of crazy.
But I think that these types of things, these types of Ricky Lake displays of unconsciousness where you're like, wow, well, at least I don't poop on my spouse's bed. I was talking to my son about that. He's like, how does one do that? Like, where do you even stand to accomplish that? I was like, I don't know. I hadn't thought that far through.
I'm just curious, how did this get brought up with our son?
Because I was watching this on Twitter and the live stream of the verdict, and he was like, oh, do you know this meme, Amber Poo or whatever?
So even our son knew
it? Like, he even knows it without really knowing much about it. I feel like, so
Yes, you know, Mark. We will move on, Mark. Yes,
I know. I've read a few sociological books about the Ricky Lake show and those types of tabloid talk shows. And I think this was a stand-in for those type of shows that allowed most people to sell themselves their own superiority. Like, well, I don't have that kind of unconsciousness with my spouse, so I must be doing better, especially if it's Johnny Depp, someone you think who's privileged and wealthy and good looking and all of these things, right? But if he has to deal with this, then like my life won't be so bad. So I do feel like it was a lot of people sort of buying into their own superiority because you're not like that. And I found it a disturbing display of unconsciousness for all of us who were commenting on it, plus watching the unconsciousness in the trial. And I'm glad to be done with it, but I will miss the hairdos.
Hallelujah. All right, let's start the show and talk about what's going on with Ukraine. So we've got some pretty unbelievable news overnight. And it looks, you know, just as we think, okay, maybe tensions are going to start to tamp down a little bit, maybe with sanctions and all of these other things, maybe things are going to get pulled back a little bit. No, it's going the opposite direction. And now, of course, there's the pressure from Vladimir Zelensky in Ukraine, calling on Western allies and NATO allies to send heavier weapons. We will not give up our land. We want to take back Crimea. And yet this is not how this is going to end. The way that this is going to end is with Russia taking over the eastern part of Ukraine, controlling the Donbass, and who knows what happens with Vladimir Zelensky, and who knows what happens with the western part of Ukraine. But overnight, we've got some heated words from Vladimir Putin. Let's put this up on the screen. World War III has already started. This is one of a television personality in Russia, basically saying, hey, we're already here. A Russian One broadcaster, Olga Skapavilya, I'm saying that wrong, effectively declared war on the West. And Vladimir Putin also, so she's basically, I guess, echoing what the Kremlin is saying, which is that Russia is sounding alarm of a direct conflict with the United States if we continue to send additional weapons to that region, specifically ones that are long range and could actually strike Russia. So here's the headline. The U.S. is on a Russia sounds alarm on risk of direct conflict with the United States. The U.S. is on a collision course with Russia by sending rocket launchers to Kiev, a top diplomat claims. Washington's arming of Ukraine with heavier weapons increases the risk of direct U.S.-Russia confrontation, regardless of American statements about mitigating such a possibility. This is coming from Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov, said on Wednesday. And then, of course, this is all around this decision to send supply HIMARS, multiple rocket launchers, to Ukraine. Washington is saying that the weapon systems will not allow Ukrainian forces to attack Russia directly. And then it says, hey, it's just allowing you to basically, allowing them to hit them in the Donbass region, right, in eastern Ukraine. So this, we were laughing about this earlier today because the weapon system that the White House is basically now saying they're going to send
is medium range is what they were saying. So on Monday, when Biden was asked, will you send long range missiles into Ukraine with the potential to fire inside of Russian borders? He said no. It was a flat no, right? To which Russian officials said, good decision, because we are looking at what they said was, if Russian cities are attacked, we will retaliate over where those decisions are made. And that doesn't mean Kiev, right? So that is a veiled threat to, we know those decisions are made in Washington. We will attack the source of these decisions if this happens. And then just today now, the White House is saying, well, we're looking at sending medium range. And I was texting to Clayton. I said, this is like a Goldilocks of how the size of the missiles, right? This one's too big. This one's too small. This one's just right. What is the size of a missile that is just right, which will not bring retaliation onto American shores? We're sort of playing with that right now. We're playing like a combat board game.
It's hilarious to look at, you know, okay, so you're going to be angry if we send long range ones, of course, because that would hit inside of Russia. And there's already been plenty of reports of attacks inside of Russian territory. But now we have Biden sending medium range. So just enough where we'll be able to hit inside the Donbass region and hit your troops there. So, I mean, at what point does Putin just call your bluff and say enough is enough? I mean, that appears to be what's happening on the Russian side of things, which is, look, you continue to send this shit.
Yes.
You keep sending all these weapons. You keep, you know, you keep funneling this in. We've warned you. At what point do they actually finally make good on this warning?
Well, because, and we know this from the Mueller report and through the Trump years, right, that the United States has been sending weaponry and money for a long time. That was at the heart of the Trump impeachment. The first one, right, was the fact that Trump wanted to hold up this aid in exchange for blah, 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 right? So it tells us that this has been a modus operandi for a very long time. So when will Russia consider this an escalation? And when will they say, okay, we know you've been doing this for a while. This is sort of how it's been. We've been letting this slide. And then when, right? When is that inflection point that it no longer slides?
Right. So the White House press secretary was asked about this, Karine Jean-Pierre. She was asked about this yesterday about these weapons. And isn't this going to elevate things? I thought we weren't going to send heavy weapons. And then we're and the president came out with an opinion piece in the New York Times. We'll get to that in a second on what I will and will not do in Ukraine. So we'll go through what the president just released in the New York Times, which is actually pretty amazing. But here is Karine Jean-Pierre answering this question. Take a listen.
Can you offer some clarity on what President Biden meant when he said we're not sending Ukraine rocket systems that could strike into Russia, since even short-range missiles could fly over the border if they're fired nearby? And is the White House concerned that sending a rocket system could be considered escalatory?
So let me first say that those systems continue to be under consideration. So I don't have anything to preview on anything specific there. But as the president said, we won't be sending long range rockets for use beyond the battlefield in Ukraine. And but right now I don't have anything to preview for you today.
So okay, so the long range shit that's still on the table. So I don't have anything for I don't have any previews. I don't have any trailers for you to see them today. We might end up sending them. But right now, the missiles that we're going to send are only for the battlefield in Ukraine. That's it. So that's all we're going to send. I mean, what a little delicate tap dance they're trying to do here. So President Biden comes out with this piece in the New York Times. By the way, just as a little point on this. So yesterday, the president released an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal about what he plans to do on inflation, which is to stay totally focused. That's his primary concern, is battling inflation. And then he takes time out of his day to pen an entire opinion piece about the war in Ukraine. So his focus is still on inflation, I guess, right? So then he tells us in a New York Times piece a day later, in an opinion piece. I mean, I wonder what opinion pages are going to be left after this. He's just like writing opinion pieces all day right now. So here he is in the New York Times. President Biden, what America will and will not do in Ukraine.
Yes. And he says pretty much everything that we have just talked about from his spokesperson. He will not send long range missiles to strike beyond the battlefield in Ukraine. He will not move to oust Putin. Did I say that right?
Yeah, you said it. Oust Putin.
That's very unsatisfying. It sounds wrong the way I said it, but he will not move to bring about regime change, and he will not support a NATO war, right? That's what he's saying because...
Okay, well, now we've gotten it in print.
Yes, right. But again, when you write a check to support something, you are, in fact, involved in something.
Yeah, that's
right?
A great point. Like, yeah, I'm not going to stand for Black Lives Matter doing the things they do. But at the same time, I'm writing you a check. It's like, well, how do you square those two things? I'm going to send.
Yes.
I'm going to send $40 billion. And then on top of that, today, we're sending you another $700 million, which include these medium range weapons as part of this new $700 million package. So you just signed a $40 billion package last week. And then quietly, you unilaterally just pushed forward another $700 million package without anyone even lifting a hand to say, wait a minute, what are we doing? You just said, why not just round it up to a billion?
Well, the piece reads very cleanly. Like, we can have what we want. It's going to go our way. Don't worry. I have compartmentalized what we will and will not do. And it's on lock, right? It's a set it and forget it. It's like curlers you wear overnight. Just don't worry. Everything can be a hair analogy if you want it to be. So it, but it reads very disingenuous, because if in fact your most important goal is to combat inflation, you will no longer spend things that are not the priority of the American people.
So he says, as President Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine has said, ultimately this war will only definitively end through diplomacy. Well, we could have told you that. Like, it's going to end through diplomacy. So, but the fact of the matter is, it's going to end the way that Henry Kissinger basically said it should end, which is you're going to have to give up the eastern region of Ukraine that's not under your control anyway and doesn't actually want to be under your control. You're not going to reclaim Crimea. That's not something that Vladimir Putin is going to allow to happen. So you might as well just get that out of your head. And the United States, Mark Milley, admitting that, look, if we put ships in the Black Sea, that's a provocation that we can't really walk back. So it appears to me, at least from the United States side of this, if you're reading the tea leaves here, that they're pulling, you know, it seems to me that they're, I don't want to say caving, but it appears to be that they're blinking. You know, is that maybe the right way to say it?
I guess because in the Department of Defense press conference just 2 days ago, Lloyd Austin used the term, we want to strengthen their hand, right? And so I guess it does seem that we're just trying to make it seem that they can give up less. That's sort of how I interpret it, right?
Right.
Like, because if we don't, Russia will take even more. Right. If this is truly a negotiation and Russia comes and says, I want 30% of your land, and we could just take it, right? If they believe that to be the case. But if Russia sort of calculates that we could safely get 15%, then we've strengthened their hand. Then that is the negotiation table. But we had not heard things like this before. We were told from the Western media and from the White House that Ukraine is winning, Ukraine will reign supreme with our help, we are supporting this winning side, and so now I guess we're all supposed to stomach a different type of truth, which, you know, we can. I think collectively we can. We're adults here, right? We can say stop war, and this is what the new borders look like.
Yeah, but if they're going to continue to send heavy weapons, you're hearing it right from Russia that this is World War III. Like, any further escalation, like if you're going to send these HIMAR weapons, you're going to send any of these things that are going to reach our lands, like that's a risk of such a development and an escalation that you should be prepared for. So Russia hasn't really held back from sticking to its guns, so to speak. They've kind of told us what they're going to do just around it, basically at every turn through this.
Right? Yes.
And yeah. I've said it before, you know, we heard from Sergei Lavrov the other day and talks about this provocation and talks about this escalation, that this is going to be something you're not going to want to do. You know, at what point then do they actually pull the trigger and do something to the United States through some sort of an attack? Like, how many times do you whack a hornet's nest? And to me, this is as close as possible. And this is, again, flies in the face of everything President Biden told us he wouldn't do. Putting these types of weapons in there is World War III. He told us this.
Yes.
And we've done exactly that. We've put in aircraft. Okay. We've put in aircraft. We've put in drones. We put in all sorts of things. Right. This is World War III. And you're hearing it from the Russian press now. And so I don't know. It sounds a little bit disjointed at the moment. Washington saying one thing, Russia saying something else. And you hope that cooler heads prevail, because you're playing around with right now. You're playing around with
lives.
You're playing around with nuclear war is basically what you're doing. This is what we're facing right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how are we as civilians supposed to know what the threshold is, right? We're just told to go along with it. Like, oh, we'll send this care package. It's okay. We won't be retaliated upon. We'll send this care package. It's okay. It's going to wreck our economy, but that's fine, right?
Right.
You're okay. Yeah, it's very hard to know what the calculations are, because they don't seem to be anything that we get a say in.
That's right. So let us know what you think about this in the chat. By the way, we should mention, if you want to subscribe to our channel, you can do so by going to redacted.inc. We have a website, and you can become a VIP member and chat, subscribe for as low as 99 cents a month to support what we do here. redacted.inc/join is how you can do that. You can become a channel member and support what we do here on the show. All right, let's move along. Let's talk about what's going on with inflation and what a crap show it was in Washington yesterday. Talk about a totally disjointed team. We're hearing all sorts of rumors right now about Team Biden, that President Biden is unhappy with his staff. First of all, I never like these stories because you know they're coming from somewhere. So someone's leaking this kind of stuff. And President, the buck always should stop with the President of the United States. So when you hear that, like, the President is upset with his staff and that he's thinking about a shakeup, that to me just shows a lack of leadership. And I don't like these, like, leaks that come out. We heard it during Trump. Like,
All the time.
Like, the people around him are incompetent, so we're going to get additional people. We had a crap show that was in Washington yesterday where you have Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen coming out and admitting that she got it wrong on inflation. And you had President Biden meeting with Jerome Powell yesterday in the White House to talk about inflation and all of these runaway prices. So this is Janet Yellen yesterday admitting to, I got it wrong. I just didn't figure out how this whole inflation thing was going to work. Listen to Janet Yellen.
I was wrong then about the path that inflation would take. As I mentioned, there have been unanticipated and large shocks to the economy that have boosted energy and food prices and supply bottlenecks that have affected our economy badly that I didn't, at the time, didn't fully understand.
So I didn't fully understand it. Okay, good. She owned it. I didn't understand. I was wrong on inflation. How refreshing. Let's first of all, how refreshing to actually hear a member of the government coming out and saying I was wrong. I didn't get it. I mean, here's a woman who, and other members of the, you know, administration didn't get it right either, but no one else admitted that.
Yes.
So you have Janet Yellen coming out saying that, and then you don't have, when the same question then is asked of other members of the administration, they don't come out and say this. So the same question was asked of from Peter Ducey in the White House press briefing room. Does the president take any responsibility for this? And here's what he had to say, or she had to say.
Does President Biden take any responsibility for his policies potentially contributing to inflation?
When we talk about the gas prices right now, this is indeed Putin's gas hike.
No, it actually isn't. The White House dodging questions on inflation is
So no, it's not. It's not anyone's fault.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, we already had this in the Trump administration. I take no responsibility, right? Nope.
Right.
This is kind of the, that I, it's hard to even expect that of them, but at least we got at one person saying that they took responsibility for not understanding it. Although again, she's finance expert. She probably should have understood that government spending usually leads to inflation and that these were unusual economic times that were going to be more severe than normal economic times due to the pandemic, right? Due to a brewing conflict internationally. So, okay. I mean, I don't know. Is it apology accepted? That's okay. You miscalculated, but your job is to be the main calculator.
Well, and then you also had... Yeah, but she already said this. She gave all sorts of statements ahead of time about this. That the indicators aren't there. This is not going to happen. The same yes. thing. Jerome Powell said this.
But at the time, we took them to task and said that doesn't make sense. Like that's not what the econ books teach us. What advanced models do you see that the rest of us don't see? Like before any of the spending packages were even announced, we said, this is going to hurt the rest of us, right?
But they kept telling us, no, this is going to be fine. Nothing to see here. Inflation's not going to be a problem, right? And here's what all of them said. Here's a little roundup of what they had to say.
Make these investments now, with interest rates at historic lows, will generate more growth, higher incomes, a stronger economy.
I really do not expect that we'll be in a situation where inflation rises to troubling levels.
Is there a risk of inflation? I think there's a small risk, and I think it's manageable.
Well, these are things that cost votes, right? Because when people don't understand why your calculations were off so severely, right? When the president and his administration tells you it's going to be okay. It's not going to hurt that much. It's really not us. And then their actions continue to make these things worse. It's hard for the American people to understand those types of things. And this is what changes votes.
And the idea is like hard to wrap your head around, isn't it? Because you start looking at the data through the like the lens of what American families are going through right now. And I mean, they're dealing with, you know, they're dealing with double digit inflation. There are gas prices that are at historic levels right now, all-time highs. And if you look at, I mean, you know, if you talk about like the average price of a gallon of gas, it's $4.62 or whatever, right?
Yes.
That's just the average. Because you've got like Los Angeles, people sending us messages about that. It's over $7 now.
Yes.
And so this, when you look at it through the lens of like families, this is, I mean, look at this. And then wages, of course, also not paving the way for lower despite higher wages, inflation gave the average worker a 2.4% pay cut last year.
Those are people who are working, right? But people on fixed income and Social Security had, you know, they had a meager increase in 2022, but it did not keep up with this inflation. So people on fixed income are hurting just as much, if not more.
And then out today is this new U.S. Department of Agriculture study and CPI data where food prices are up 10.8%. They're expected to continue to rise for the rest of 2022. So we're only seeing the beginning of these like stagflation trends that we're beginning to see right now.
So inflation continues throughout Europe and throughout the United States, and politicians pretend that what they are doing is it's out of their hands, right? They can't do anything about it. So just buckle down. We want to tell you about monkeypox now because there is a surprising player in this new virus, and it's not who you might think. So the medical community is trying to combat a monkeypox outbreak. So your favorite virology lab in Wuhan is working on this. So don't worry, everyone. They got this. According to this peer-reviewed study, since there is no monkeypox outbreak in China, the Wuhan Institute of Virology has made a synthetic version in order to study it and make a vaccine. Now, is anyone else uncomfortable with the idea of Wuhan creating and isolating a virus? This is the same Wuhan lab where COVID-19 was born. And we trust them all. I'm going to let Dr. John Campbell tell us this in his own words, exactly how comfortable he feels.
If you're already starting to feel uncomfortable, join the club. I'm actually very uncomfortable about what I'm about to tell you. So that's the name of the paper there. Efficiency of a large-scale fragment of monkeypox virus. So basically what they're doing is they make a section of monkeypox virus. And they want to use that as a quantitative polymerase chain reaction template. And they're going to use this way to put it together into a yeast. Now, direct quote from this paper. Since monkeypox infection has never been associated with an outbreak in China, the viral genome material required for PCR detection is unavailable. So the Chinese authorities, it would appear, are incapable of getting hold of monkeypox virus. So they have to basically make their own using synthetic techniques, or make a part of the viral genome themselves using synthetic techniques. So the monkeypox virus.
Okay, so they can't get it. So they're going to make it, right? There are labs in the UK, the US, and Africa, and also in European countries that have genomes of monkeypox. They could just like get it from someone who has it, right? But the Chinese don't want those samples. They want to make their own. You okay with that?
No, I'm not okay with that. I mean, again, the ridiculousness of it, and you start to unpack this, you think, really, these guys? And by the way, he didn't want to go into this, and Dr. John Campbell didn't want to talk more deeply about this, but let's talk about like the National Institutes of Health, like and funding this and being involved in the in this yes. whole process. Like, really? And it's isn't it remarkable then? So when people start talking about conspiracy theories, you're like, oh, you're just a conspiracy nut. Well, then stop giving us things to think about.
Right. I mean, the date on this paper is February, right? And so there was not really a big outbreak in February. Why were they on that one? He's like, why were they so prescient about the fact that there would be an outbreak when these cases are weeks old.
Well, and you remember last year, I mean, we got the information where they were predicting a monkeypox or smallpox variation outbreak at this time this year.
Yeah.
Like they had the date down to almost the exact day when we heard about it. I mean, how do you hear about it? It's written down. They have it planned out. We know where it comes from, and we're crazy. We're crazy for even bringing it up.
Right. I mean, if you look at this right here, this element, the study points out that this sort of DIY monkeypox virus could raise potential security concerns. So you think? That's what it says. Like, you
where
know,
does this come from?
This is the paper from China.
Oh, this is the paper. Okay.
Yeah. And the Wuhan lab is one of several Chinese virology labs and universities that are working on this. And the paper says, we're just going to mix up our own pot if that's okay with you. Although this could cause some security concerns that, oh, maybe the rest of the world doesn't love because we're Wuhan, right? And we never actually gave, I mean, John Campbell in this video says, let's not even talk about how we never got a straight answer out of China and the Wuhan lab about COVID, right? They were just like, well, seems to have come from an animal. Sorry. Although keep in mind that monkeypox is also highly transmissible to animals.
Yeah. Well, it is. And if the pustules are open and so forth, it's not as if like you just rub up against, you know, you have to be like rubbing up against somebody, right, to get this, and then it becomes airborne. And that's the thing that's the thing about these things is like, it's not something where you would have a pandemic, right? Because, well, you could have a pandemic if it's not treated properly, but you don't show symptoms of it until you actually have the monkeypox. So when you get the breakout, that's when you've got it. And people see it, and then you become symptomatic. You're not like showing symptoms 5 days before you suddenly show like monkeypox.
Yes, but he talks about if somehow it were to get, like there are people who maybe have contact with animals. If it were to get into animal populations, it would be nearly impossible to get it out of animal populations. And then you think about our food chain, right? How dangerous that can be, how precarious we already are right now on the supply chain for things that are grown, for wheat and things like that. So that is concerning, obviously.
Well, and take a look at this. So this afternoon, of course, there's already pharmaceutical companies who are taking advantage of this. So take a look at this. This is Tonix Pharmaceutical Company. So you wonder why this company's stock surged overnight in pre-market trading, and then right during trading today surged. Tonix Pharmaceuticals gains on U.S. patent win for monkeypox vaccine technology. Of course they do. And then a few hours later, here, take a look at this chart. This is the stock chart. You can see in the light gray there is pre-market trading, and then in dark gray or whatever is open market. So when the market's open, you can see how well this monkeypox vaccine stock did today in the open markets. I mean, millions of shares being traded because of monkeypox vaccines. And that's what, you know.
Interesting. Okay, interesting. Well, let's follow the money a little bit and talk about how equitable this all is. So the United Kingdom is investing $10 million to research a monkeypox vaccine. There currently is not one, but studies show that the smallpox vaccine is 85% effective at preventing the spread of monkeypox vaccine. But the availability of that vaccine has highlighted this uncomfortable truth, is that the world is far more concerned with monkeypox now that it is affecting non-African nations, right? So the spread of monkeypox into non-African nations has shown the world that there are treatments, including vaccines and antivirals, but these treatments are not offered to Africans. Why? Africa has five times the number of cases in the Western countries that have outbreaks. Western countries with monkeypox have no reported deaths, but in Africa there have been 63 deaths this year in Cameroon, Central African Republic, Congo, and Nigeria. And where are the vaccines? Out of Africa. One Nigerian doctor says that their patients are, quote, treated conservatively while their contacts are monitored. No antiviral, no vaccine, right? And so the World Health Organization does, in fact, according to the Associated Press, have 31 million doses of the smallpox vaccine, but they're not giving any to Africa. They keep them in what they call donor countries. And according to Dr. Mike Ryan from the World Health Organization, quote, the agency was considering allowing rich countries to use the smallpox vaccines to try to limit the spread of monkeypox. Now, I just want to ask you, does this make sense? You vaccinate where there is less of an outbreak in order to stop the spread?
So you would inoculate
the wealthy people where the outbreak is smaller.
Oh, yeah. Because the rich, you've got to take care of the rich people.
Yes. Right? I mean, they're basically just saying that, right? They're just right out saying that.
I mean, this is exactly what happened during COVID, right? We couldn't get, vaccines shipped to Africa.
Well, Africa got their vaccines, yes, dead last.
Right. So, yeah, we can't ship them to Africa. Like, and, oh, your profits are through the roof. Is there anything that we could do? We'll send $40 billion into Ukraine to make sure that those, refugees and we're going to send you weapons. But when we want to, when we were hearing from the World Health Organization how important it was to, slow the curve or bend the curve or bend the knee or whatever the hell they were telling us to do, and to stop the spread, well, there you go. Like if you had all these vaccines that you said worked, then ship them all over the place, ship them everywhere.
Yes,
we couldn't do that.
Right. Well, another expert said that it was surprising to see the rest of the world hop all in on this treat monkeypox when it only just jumped off the African continent, right? So it's been here. This quote, he says, you would think that the new cases are deadlier and more dangerous than what we have in Africa, like based on this response, right? But we are now just seeing it can end once and for all, but it is no longer just in Africa. It's now everybody is worried.
I just wonder how, steep this is going to go. I know other doctors have said we don't, likely seeing like the size of a pandemic like we would see with COVID. But look, we heard from the World Health Organization just this week getting together in a panel, literally Bill Gates sitting there at the World Economic Forum and literally sitting on a panel called How Do We Handle the Next Pandemic? That was the name of the panel. And all of these rich elites just sitting there ironing out, laying out exactly what we do. They've got a plan in place. Among the things that they've talked about is consolidating power when one of these pandemics hits, that what happens if economically banking and other things are upside down. Don't worry, we will take control of all government banks in one central location. Nothing to see here. Don't worry about it. We'll make sure that we control lockdowns and also we will lower the threshold for vaccine development. We'll get those things out as quickly as possible, because we got to take care of our companies that produce these vaccines quickly and get these funneled out to people as quickly as possible. Don't worry about trials. Don't worry about going through like to see if there are any adverse effects or anything like that.
Don't worry about it. Wuhan's on it.
Wuhan's on it. I always feel good when Wuhan is on a vaccine.
Yes. Yeah.
Working on these.
Well, there's nothing we can do about it. I mean, they've published the paper. They're already brewing it up, right? I mean, they do say like, oh, maybe we can only brew parts of it so that, but okay, like the COVID pandemic is in recent memory. So maybe we just, is there anybody else that can do this?
The Iranian Putin in our chat says Joe Biden just wants to sniff your pox.
That's disgusting.
That's disgusting. Sniff your pox.
Don't tell a dirty joke.
Oh, man.
We did get a super chat from someone saying, it was a $2 super chat saying, buy John Campbell a beer. I did see that. So thank you for that.
I think someone said, we all owe, the whole world owes Dr. John Campbell a beer right now. Rusty Shackelford says, I'm waiting on lizard pox next so we can have Godzilla versus Kong 2.
There you go.
I would pay for that.
Let's make this fun.
Yeah, Brian H. I'm not going to read that one. Oh, I poop emoji in a something got monkeypox. Yes, thank you, Brian. Thank you, Brian, for that.
Thank you for that. All right, some of these are silly.
And
so
Brian says, hey, kilo sheep coin stops monkeypox. Maybe. We'll see if that actually works or not. Perhaps. All right, let's talk about our next story, shall we? All right. Let's talk about what's happening in Sri Lanka. We've been covering this story here on the show, and it's an important story, and a lot of the world wants to know about it, and the mainstream media largely doesn't cover it. So what do you get when you cross rapidly declining wages, massive food shortages, no fuel, and a greedy government that has hoarded resources away from its people? Well, you've got a country in total collapse right now. Now, it's fairly complicated what's going on there, and it's not as simple as a simple soundbite to explain it. But a perfect example of what's happening with this total collapse in a country like this is Sri Lanka. And all of these market conditions are happening in other Western countries. So the reason that's so important to study what's happening in Sri Lanka is to see how this is going to spread throughout the rest of the world. And if you think, oh, just a small, you know, small country over there, nothing to really pay attention to, you're wrong. There are real people with real pain and real suffering happening right now. And the greater borrowing power that is happening in Sri Lanka is not there. So Western powers have a lot of borrowing power. They can get IMF loans and they can kind of get pulled out of and bailed out for different things, right? Sri Lanka can't right now. And that's the difference. As we just mentioned, the United States, wages rapidly decreasing, fuel shortages happening, food shortages, and a government that is hoarding gold while people are suffering. So let's look at Sri Lanka over the past few weeks. No fuel, no food, electricity blackouts, doctors canceling surgeries. Imagine that, like you're lined up to get a really important cancer surgery. Sorry. Health experts say that more people could die in Sri Lanka from this than COVID. Now, this is a country I've been watching closely because this small island nation could have prevented this. But its corrupt political leaders are to blame right alongside Western sanctions of Russia during the Ukraine war. So this all could have been prevented. This wasn't like a Hurricane Katrina moment. This was a human, corrupt politician moment that created this pain for people. Again, it's the small countries that get crushed first, and it's coming for the rest of us. It's coming for the rich countries. It's coming for the rich countries in Europe and the West, and you better pay attention. So these politicians chose greed and corruption over taking care of their people, and the people of Sri Lanka are fighting back. Sri Lankans right now burning down multiple houses owned by political elites. Take a look at this. See these three homes? This is one politician who owns these three homes. So I guess when you burn these down because of corruption, that's how they burned all three of them down. That's what happened this week. They're also dragging politicians out of their cars, attacking them, even throwing their politicians' cars right into the river.
Oh, my goodness.
Prices in Sri Lanka have more than doubled over the past 8 months. At the same time, wages have dropped by 50%.
And they're only able to pay those police guards because they've printed money.
Yeah.
The government employees are being paid with printed money.
So, and it's probably not even backed by anything.
No, you're probably right about that.
And printing with what at this point? I mean, they've already defaulted on $51 billion in foreign debt. So, I mean, they're literally saying we have nothing left. We have nothing left. This is a country in total collapse. You're watching it happen. Sri Lankans are lining up to fill up their gas tanks. They're stretched for miles or kilometers, whatever you prefer. This is one example of a tuk-tuk driver. Listen to her explaining how she has to sleep in her vehicle in order to get petrol. Take a listen.
Because of the current crisis, we have to allocate more time to wait in lines.
So she has to wait in line for a long time. She gets up and gets her kids ready for school and does what she can. And then she sleeps in the car and she has to wait 12 hours. Just to fill up her tuk-tuk, just to be able to drive people as a taxi and to make a little bit of money.
I mean, who even has the money to, where's anybody going in her tuk-tuk?
And this is one thing I heard, we've been covering Sri Lanka here on the show, and I heard from some Sri Lankans who wrote to us and said, please, please come here because we are suffering. And one of the biggest fallouts from all of this, of course, is tourism. And so because people think we're a country in chaos, so people don't want to come here, so we're being crushed even more because people are scared to come here.
Yes.
And I was like, I would love to come. You know, but the fear that's out there right now crushing these people's businesses as a result of it. So we hear you. We hear you. This is the worst economic crisis since the country became independent in 1948. So now, because of corruption, their political leaders and Western countries placing sanctions on Russia, the people of Sri Lanka are slipping into utter chaos. As an example of this, this 90,000-ton oil shipment from Russia had to wait off the coast because Sri Lankans couldn't pay the bill. Cash-strapped Sri Lanka gets Russian oil to ease shortages. Their currency collapsed in March, shortly after the start of the war in Ukraine, so they couldn't pay for the oil. It's just sitting there off the coast. Now they're begging their rich Western countries in the IMF to loan them some money to kickstart their economy and turn on the oil refinery so it can actually start to process the Russian oil. But of course, they have massive debt, and they've defaulted on that debt, $51 billion. Also, they don't have a finance minister because literally no one wants the job. They cannot fill the job post. Hey, do you want to be the finance minister of a country that just defaulted on $51 billion in debt?
Here's a negative balance sheet. Figure it out.
Can we go through some resumes to see if there's anybody that would want to do that? No one wants the job. They can't negotiate with the International Monetary Fund without a finance minister. That's part of the doctrine. You can't do it. So the new prime minister, I'm going to say his name. I'm going to try to say it clearly. Wickramasinghe. Did I say that right for any of our Sri Lankans that are watching right now? The new prime minister, Wickramasinghe, was just appointed finance minister as well. So yes, the new prime minister literally has two jobs now. That would be like President Biden also being the Secretary of the Treasury, like Janet Yellen's job, doing both of those things. It's a disaster, and the IMF has a lot of issues with Sri Lanka.
Isn't one of America's principles freedom and, you know, lack of corruption and democracy? So where's America to send in some money here? Because that $41 billion in Ukraine could have gone a long way, apparently,
yeah,
in Sri Lanka, but that's not our values.
No, because, again, we need to do this so that we actually get debts, or we get, you know, you're going to have to pay us back.
Right,
so
you have to pay back that debt or show some willingness to do that.
So they get a loan from the IMF under conditions of austerity. So the same people that got you into this mess are actually going to manage this money and then take care of the people. That's exactly how this is going to work. So they're going to get this money. The International Monetary Fund will actually send them this money. And then they're going to have to be in charge of putting all of this in place. So they'll get the International Monetary Fund loan to, and the same basic corrupt politicians who are running the show are now going to manage that money. Mm-hmm. So the same people that got you into this mess are now going to manage the IMF loan if they get it. Great.
Well, they'll do it with pitchforks out in front of their house. So maybe they'll be a bit more motivated to do it better.
I guess. I mean, yeah. And I love that they're right now, the young people are up in arms and taking to the streets. We told you last week how people are pulling politicians out of their cars and attacking them. So they're trying to get Russian oil directly, which is under an embargo by the EU. The government also effectively ended subsidies on fuel by raising prices to a record high on Tuesday. Diesel prices have increased 230%. In Sri Lanka, and petrol has gone up 137% in the past 6 months. And yesterday, Sri Lanka's new prime minister asked the protesters who are getting desperate to instead stop protesting, and we want you to join the protest, whatever that means. So here they are, literally being fired upon with water cannons and water guns. Like, these are people being attacked with, and hey, we want you to join us. So we're going to keep shooting you with water. These are the same, like, do you really, you're going to join these guys? You're going to join these politicians who just fired on you with water cannons?
They are protesting. So just stop protesting against us.
Stop protesting and just join us. Join us. We're going to set up a youth advisory board. And we just want to hear from what you have to say. Here's what we have to say. You guys are all corrupt and you've destroyed our country. That's what we want to say to you. And then you layer on top of that Western sanctions against Russia and how destructive this has all been. Again, it starts with the small countries, and you take away their rights, you crush their economy, you take away their ability to get fuel, inflation is absolutely running rampant, they can't get food, they're canceling surgeries, and this is what that's what Russian sanctions look like. Right,
this
there
is terrifying. Also, this strange use of masks in, like, willy-nilly
Right. Like, you're really concerned right now at this point. Like, you got bigger fish to fry. There's like two guys in a mask in a crowd right now.
Well, it's fine if there's some people who feel like they need to wear masks because they're compromised, but people wearing masks like under their chins and then screaming. What's going on there? Why do you need that on your chin? Yeah, this is a terrifying example for the rest of us, right? That how your politicians make choices that will affect your lives.
Yeah. Well, people of Sri Lanka, we're thinking about you. We're covering the story. And boy, we hope that, you know, Western countries get their heads out of their asses and they're able to step up and help, because this is a disaster, maybe 50% or even more, because of Western countries imposing sanctions and doing what they do best, which is stepping on the little guy. And that's what's happened here, unfortunately.
All right, let's move on and talk about freedom of speech on social networks, or lack thereof. The Supreme Court has ruled that Texas cannot stop social media companies from censoring content for now. This is over the law HB 20 in Texas that states that large social media platforms may not, quote, censor a user, a user's expression, or a user's ability to receive the expression of another person. Well, a trade organization group representing all the big social media companies is suing the state of Texas to get the law struck down. But of course, litigation takes forever, and the groups don't want to abide by this law while they litigate it. So they asked the Supreme Court for what is called a stay, which means that the thing being litigated cannot be put in place while it is being litigated. And the court granted this, which means that Texas Governor Greg Abbott cannot implement the law right now. But that doesn't mean that it won't ever come to pass. This case will continue through the courts, and the industry groups representing, Twitter, Facebook, Google, Amazon, and Apple will give it their heaviest hitters and their biggest dollars. Now, they already know that there is some opposition by way of judges, because Justice Alito, Justice Thomas, and Justice Gorsuch are automatically not on their side. They authored a dissent to the ruling, which means if they had it their way, they would keep the law in place during this litigation. They do not think that the law should be stayed. Here is just an excerpt from their dissent. They said that a stay should only be issued when there is, quote, substantial likelihood of success on the merits. And in this case, they say it is not at all obvious how our existing precedents, which predate the age of the internet, should apply to large social media companies. They give case law going both ways, right? So they're basically saying this case is not a slam dunk. The court has ruled in favor of platforms housing other people's speech and also against platforms housing other people's speech. And the internet makes this a wild card. And they don't think the Supreme Court should decide state politics by default. So the plaintiffs in this case, though, the social media companies, say that this law hinders this law is actually facially unconstitutional under the First Amendment. So it is their First Amendment right to censor speech, so they say. They also really object to the accountability piece, right? Because the law says if you censor someone, you have to tell them exactly why you did it based on what terms of service. They do not want to do that. They do not do that now. And they absolutely don't want to be called out for inconsistency. For instance, why can the mainstream media say X and smaller content creators cannot say X, right? A similar law in Florida, though, was struck down by an appeals court just last week. And Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has not said what he will do about it. If anything, he wants this, though. I do think he's going to take another lap, but we're not sure how. The Supreme Court, though, is not the court that will hear the rest of the lawsuit about HB 20 in Texas. They were only there to consider this stay. The litigation will proceed in the lower court, where it had been, and we will see what will happen. Now, if it prevails, it will only prevail in Texas. It will give other conservative states a template with how they could prevail, but that doesn't mean that it will ever become federal law, especially because The Supreme Court really feels like it should not have decided this, that it should be a state issue. And you will never see states like California, New Jersey, New York ever put anything like this in place.
But do you need it to, I guess, if you have enough of these where a company maybe changes what it does and says, we don't censor anything now? I mean, you know, again, what happened with the Hunter Biden laptop story and what happened with the New York Post story when they broke that story and you couldn't share it anywhere. You couldn't share it on Twitter. You couldn't share it on Facebook. But then the damage had already been done, right? So that when that story broke, you couldn't share it anywhere.
Yes.
You couldn't share it. And so this could have altered the election.
Yes.
Right. But because it wasn't allowed to be shared, you got shut down. If you tried to share it, they wouldn't allow you to do it. And the damage was done. It got buried. It was discussed, you know, it was called Russian disinformation or whatever it was. And then, of course, we found out that it was actually true.
Yes.
How would we have been different if Twitter let you publish this story? If Facebook allowed you to share the story, what would the outcome of the election, how might it have been different?
Well, that's...
We saw with Hillary Clinton what happened when James Comey released, you know, came out with his story.
Yes.
And that ran everywhere. That could have largely led to Hillary Clinton losing the election.
Well, that's a Schrodinger's cat, right? Schrodinger's cat.
Cat? Yes. How? Well, how do you explain that?
Because you cannot observe an observation. You can't observe something happening and something not happening, right?
Right.
It's like the sliding doors principle or Heisenberg uncertainty principle, where you can't observe the thing happening and the thing not happening at the same time.
Right. That's right? Schrodinger's cat. Yeah.
I think that is also, I think that's more Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
What about Dr. Seuss principle?
Newton's law. We're just now talking about random
Occam's
things.
Razor.
But no, I think that like... You cannot observe what would happen in a person's life if they had made the train and if they had not made the train, right? We cannot manipulate time and stimulants and then observe both things. So we cannot know what the world would have been like had that story been disseminated far and wide. We just right. can't observe both things.
That's true. Would people have cared about that story? Or
yes.
they were already going to vote for Biden and not vote for Trump. And it wouldn't have mattered anyway if this story made its rounds. Who knows? Hard to say, right? But all I can say is, though, this is once again another example of the Supreme Court siding with big business, right? This is what, when people get so fed up and upset about, oh, we're going to put this Supreme Court justice on here because of these cultural issues, right? That's what makes the headlines, cultural issues that come before the Supreme Court, the Roe v. Wade's of the world, right? But the real story is that most cases, almost every case the Supreme Court takes up is big business versus the little guy. That's almost overwhelmingly the caseload that comes before the Supreme Court. And almost overwhelmingly, those cases are decided in favor, shocking, of big businesses.
Yes.
So this is not a surprise. When I saw that this was, you know, struck down or what is it? No, it wasn't struck down. The stay was granted. Stay, yeah. So now it's stayed. And I was not surprised by this at all. So it's once again,
it allows social media companies to continue to have no onus of explanation for their censorship.
And even if it is about conservatives, like that overwhelming, and so maybe sometime we will actually have, as you say, like a content analysis, a media analysis to find out how much content is censored by big tech companies on behalf of conservative voices or, you know,
yes,
versus liberal voices, et cetera. Someday we'll find out. I mean, I guess someday we'll find out who is censored more on these big tech platforms.
Yes. You know, I am more interested in the background of the decisions, because if somebody can litigate and say, I was censored and I want to know why and why I was able to say, to not say this and so-and-so was, then the tech company would open itself up to discovery and have to make explanations for these choices. And it would become more apparent to all of us, although I think it already is, that is inconsistent.
Right.
And that it is a judgment call of just a few elites, maybe not even the most educated people, right? Making decisions that they feel is right for everybody else. Like this leaked video that we saw from all of these Twitter bros who were in bars saying, we literally can't let people think what they want. There are things that shouldn't be put out there, they said in Vocal Fry.
Vocal Fry? What does that mean, Vocal Fry?
Vocal Fry, it's like Valley Girl talk.
Never heard that before.
It's where you kind of drag out your sentences. It's what young girls do. It's what I had to learn not to do because I'm also from California.
God.
And you just kind of don't.
That's my skin crawl.
And your sentences and periods.
I heard a California. I knew, the other day I was at a coffee shop and I heard a woman talking exactly like that. And I, you know, and it was in Europe and she's like, oh, can I have a big coffee? Yeah, that's how we do it in America. Can I just have a big coffee? My husband wants a big one too. Can you have like any big cups? And I was like, oh my God. Nails on a chalkboard. Like, so what you just said, I remember, like, I wanted to put on my headphones. Like, I don't want to hear this.
It's people who just do not end their sentences in declarative periods and they continue to just drone on in a sort of undeclarative and uneducated sounding way. And it is more prominent among young girls. And if you are a broadcast journalist and go to broadcast training, you will learn to stop that.
That's right.
Yeah. So yes. Kevin just rung in and said that when you live overseas and you hear Americans talk, it really sounds annoying. I do have that experience too. And I try to sometimes hide my accent.
Yeah, indeed. Well, that's going to wrap it up for the show today. Please head on over to redacted.inc. We apologize for all the technical issues here on the show, but hey, thanks for sticking with us. Please go to redacted.inc to become a community member. And again, it is Mercury retrograde wrapping up here. When is it done?
I think the 2nd or 3rd of June.
I got it. 2nd or 3rd. So we're tomorrow.
We're almost there.
Tomorrow. Yeah. Please, I hope. We can't wait for that.
Philip tells us that the Heisenberg uncertainty principle tells you about if you know where the electron is going, if you know where an electron is, you don't know where it's going. If you know where it's going, you don't know where it is. I wish that we could have that doesn't work over text. You gotta turn on your microphone for that. So we're going to hold that one for tomorrow. I mean, this is just a guess, but we probably will talk about the Hunter Biden laptop story again at some point.
I would think so.
Let's put a pin on that one.
I would think so. All right, everyone. Thank you guys for watching. And we will be back here once again tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Please subscribe to the channel if you're not already a subscriber. And we will see you again tomorrow. Bye, everyone.